Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a heart. Something that's not rainy. Everybody's, I'm sure most people familiar with the show Fiddler on the Roof. Well, it was seen, you know, theatrically on Broadway as a hit movie and done in, I'm sure, many community theater groups, local groups. But this time, Joel Grey is now directing the Yiddish version here in New York, and this is the first time, and it's the cast is coming from Yiddish theater, I have Jana Robbins, who's one of the producers of this off-Broadway version, and I will, one of the things they want to talk about is, you know, when you're looking at a program and you see a long list of names that are producers, I wonder what each one is responsible for. So that's one of the things I'm going to ask her, and also about what we're going to talk about, the politics of the show. And I have her on right now. Okay. Hi, Jana.
How are you, Merle? Glad to be on the line with you, honey.
Okay.
So what can I tell you this morning?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that I'm very curious about it is about this thing when they list the whole names of various producers and it said an executive producer. So, and when I look at the program, like you and one other person are at the top.
Well, there's the long and full explanation, and then I'll give you an explanation that I think will be a little easier for the audiences to understand, because, Merle, I'm often asked, well, what does a producer do? So, specifically, well, they can do everything from hire the book writer to hiring the music people to creating the show, you know, getting the option on a movie, deciding to create it from scratch, hiring the casting people, hiring the director, hiring press, marketing. It's really like being the CEO of a company from the bottom up. You might even build the theater. Thank goodness we didn't. Stage 42 is really fantastic, and we did not build the theater. But, you know, as far as this particular show is concerned, it was originally mounted downtown at the National Yiddish Theater Volksbühne. I was asked about 2.5 years if I would be on their artistic advisory board with a number of other Broadway luminaries, and I have to tell you that I was extremely honored to be asked to be part of that, because their work recently, especially since they moved into the Museum of Jewish Heritage down near the Statue of Liberty, they have become way more visible, and the work they have been doing has been exemplary, and I was really pleased to be on their advisory board. Being on their advisory board, I was in talks with them from the beginning. about doing Fiddler on the Roof, directed by Joel Grey. I heard your opening, and I felt the same way. I thought, who needs another Fiddler on the Roof? We've all seen it. We've all seen it in high school and summer stock. But the minute they started talking about all of the social reasons and all of the political reasons to be doing it in today's world, I became so involved in it, and I just knew it was something I had to do. So I was one of the first people who decided as a commercial producer that I wanted to give this a longer life and move it up to stage 42, and I was very lucky one day after I did an interview for the Wall Street Journal, Hal Luftig, who is a very well-known Broadway producer, having produced Kinky Boots on Broadway and Thoroughly Modern Millie and Legally Blonde, among others. He called, and he too had taken his aunt to see this show, and he was so moved by it that he wanted to do this too. Both of us felt that, you know, people, I think when I met you, Merle, because everybody, I met Merle, yeah, and she's delightful. You know, I told you that the critics are saying this is a must-see show. And for me, it was that I had to produce it. There was no rhyme or reason other than it touched my soul and it touched my heart so deeply that I knew I had to be the one to help bring it to the larger theater and the larger audience, not only the Jewish audience, but every audience, anyone who is in the United States and is a descendant of an immigrant, which is all of us. So this is an important show. Okay, that's a long-winded answer. So Hal Luftig and I are listed up at the top because we are the lead producers on the show, and so that's kind of being the CEO of the company, the president of the company. Other names that are on there are executive producer and producers that are listed in that way are our advisors, general managers who go over the numbers and also oversee entire production of the show. And that has to do with everything, the unions, the legal, the marketing. We need a lot of advisors with us to make the show as good as it possibly can be. Other producers that are listed are people that helped raise money. Because a show can't be done without money. You need to raise your capitalization, right, to move it, to sell it, to pay everybody, you know, coming on in before the show is even selling tickets. And so everyone else listed there is someone who came in a very big way and worked very hard to support this show financially and make sure that we could move it forward.
Okay, so in other words, you were basically responsible for getting it, first from getting it from downtown to uptown.
That is correct. Downtown, it was produced by the theater itself. There were not commercial producers involved other than an advisory capacity. And most of the funds that were raised downtown were given to the not-profit organization of the theater down there. We moved it commercially up to stage 42.
Okay, I see. Yeah, and I'm curious because this is not what I would call for people with a star-studded show. These are basically from a group. An acting group, isn't it? Yiddish theater?
No, that's not true. I think it could be perceived that way. But they don't have their own acting troupe. They audition through Actors Equity, just like every other show in New York City. There are some people that are in our show that have done shows beforehand because the cast is asked, do they speak Yiddish? And actually, there's not one Yiddish speaker in the cast.
Yeah.
Everyone learned it phonetically. Over 60% of our cast is not Jewish. But most of them, you know, have learned to speak, you know, Yiddish. Jackie Hoffman, a funny comedian, they said, what have you learned from doing this show? She said, I've learned to speak Yiddish. Of course, and many other things, too. But, you know, it's placing this show in the language of what the people would have spoken, I think, that is the thing that hits you in the solar plexus, that hits you in the soul, in the heart. You're hearing the show as it would have been spoken. It feels like you're hearing the source material before it ever became an American musical comedy version of Fiddler on the Roof.
Right.
And having the word scroll there, you know, lots of people, I think, love to read books and envision things themselves. This is offering the audience, you know, both things. You can actually read the words, totally comprehend this, even though it's in Yiddish, but you have this language that is really was considered a ghetto language. It's a mixture of German and Russian and Hebrew. Pour over you, and the feeling start, the show starts to transcend language. I took... When I met you, I had my 7-year-old granddaughter with me. She wasn't sure she wanted to see it because she'd heard it was in Yiddish, as I think other people have the feeling. Well, will I understand this? Why do I want to watch a show in a different language? But I convinced her to come, and she was mesmerized and said to me, you know, there's all these moments in the show where Tevye talks to God. What should he do about his first daughter falling in love with the tailor? What should he do about his second daughter wanting to marry the teacher who's going to go off to Siberia? And ultimately, what should he do about his third daughter marrying out of her religion into a whole nother culture with someone? And while he was talking to God, she, you know, hits my shoulder and she says, I think he's going to say no. And she couldn't understand a word he was saying, but she knew. So he was going to, Tevye was going to say no to this daughter. And when the curtain came down, she said, oh, Grandma, and I hate to age myself with that word, but oh, Grandma, she said to me, I loved it. She said, and you know, I don't speak Yiddish, but I still understanded it. And I know she did. She knew every emotion,
wow,
the dancing, and she couldn't read quickly enough. So, you know, when you can read the script and hear it all, it's an even, you know, more moving experience, and our audiences are ecstatic. And I know you are, because I know you've seen it more than once.
Oh, yeah.
And you've come back again and again.
Yeah. I think this is like the one show people should not miss, in terms of Broadway-type shows.
I agree. I mean, we went into stage 42 because I don't feel this show is really about the heart. This really is show is about family. It's about the book. And I didn't think it, you know, could compare or should compete with the Cher show or Moulin Rouge,
right,
or
yeah,
Hamilton. It belongs where it is, and it's something truly for everyone. Anyone who is a parent, anyone who is a child, it has a strong feminist value to it about the girls finally breaking out and wanting to marry who they love rather than who Papa picks, which is what, you know, what went on in the tradition of this world. The fact that these people are also being kicked out of where they live for being different, the intolerance in the world today, the growing anti-Semitism in the world today, and not only, you know, yes, it's specifically based on a true story about a Jewish family, but I really believe that it could be about a Mexican family, a Syrian family, a Black family, the LGBTQ community today. Anyone that is feeling disenfranchised and not accepted because of their differences. So there's that whole umbrella thing that Fiddler on the Roof is about. We opened while that refugee caravan was trying to come up, if you recall, through Mexico, and was being barred from entering the United States. I mean, all these things that are going on. So Fiddler on the Roof, 50 years later, is kind of reborn into a new story of social and political relevance today that I'm not even sure that it knew it was when it was first written so many years ago.
So And as far as the fiddler, I mean, this is the first time I've ever seen
a female
being cast as a fiddler. What's your take on that?
You know, I don't even really have one. I think that's for each person to feel. I know that most people love it because since it is the story of Tevye and his five daughters and his wife Golda, that having the fiddler cross over and not be gender specific in today's day brings another beautiful thing to the story. I believe we have a female fiddler simply because she was the best for the job, and we cast her. I don't believe we said we must have a female fiddler. And I also believe that we have a backup fiddler if she is out that is male. So we have both.
Oh, okay. That was actually of all the times I've seen that. This is the first time I've seen like that the fiddler is like really playing the fiddle and walking around, and you know that there's more participation of the fiddler.
There really is, yes. The fiddler, I think, opened the show. There was a fiddler on the roof when he says the opening lines. You know, it's a fiddler on the roof, crazy. No, is it in English, in Yiddish? And I don't speak it, but I think I can say it. It says a fiddler off in Dach, Meshuggah. No, and
right.
The whole audience laughs because everybody knows Meshuggah.
Yeah,
it's an English word now, and so the fiddler was there at the top of the show, and the fiddler was there at the end of the show, but our fiddler is there representative, I believe, of God listening. The playing of the fiddle is the heartstrings of Tevye's heart, and she not only plays it, she evokes the emotion. You see how she moves, how she dances,
oh, yeah.
How she bends in sorrow. Our fiddler is evoking all the feelings that Tevye has in the communication with God, and I think all of the humanity and compassion that God has in speaking back to Tevye, to his heart.
Wow, I never even thought about that. But I always wondered, I have to tell you, I always wondered, I guess by seeing whatever, you know, that the fiddler was all basically in the beginning and the end kind of thing. And
that
I always
was
thought,
it, and it was,
I didn't
it was
understand
a concept.
What the purpose of the fiddler was.
Right, and in general, it's why our artwork shows Tevye with his daughters, because in general, most of the artwork for Fiddler on the Roof was like either a comedic Zero Mostel kind of dancing, or it was a picture of a fiddler or of a fiddle, and everybody would go, now, what does that mean? What is the esoteric meaning of this Fiddler on the Roof? And has anybody ever seen a fiddler actually on a roof? So it opens up a million questions. I think the fiddle, it really, there's a movie coming out, The Making of Fiddler on the Roof, Miracle of Miracles. It's coming out in theaters across the country in August. I think it's something for everybody.
Really?
Yes. Because it delves into the making of the original fiddler and goes the whole way through every Broadway revival of it, talks to the authors, and then finally includes ours, which I think is the most amazing fiddler that has ever been. It just makes it... I don't have the words, and I'm the producer, but it is why I had to do it. So I think if people see that, they might, you know, come up with their own idea of exactly what does that concept mean. He says, Tevye, when he's taught in the audience, says our lives are as shaky as a fiddler on the roof, living with our decisions, you know, navigating our way through the world in an ever-changing world, no matter when we're in it. But the concept actually of the fiddler on the roof, I don't know. There were always these klezmer bands back then. I think the fiddle was a well-known instrument. I think the fiddler yearns, the fiddler cries, the fiddler sounds like our heartstrings. So it just may be something that the original writer, Sholem Aleichem, many, many years ago, came up with as a concept. Simply, because Tevye is always in this conversation. Is he talking to himself? Is he talking to his God? Is he praying? But while he's doing it, the fiddler is playing the heartstrings of the feelings. I think that's what it is.
Oh, well, and that's funny. I never thought of that. At all,
Neither did I. I have more feelings about this show. I didn't say, oh, I know what I want to do. I want to revive Fiddler on the Roof. Never entered my mind. This was a gift that was given to me. And this is a gift that I'm so proud that I stepped up to the plate, accepted this as a gift, accepted the responsibility of it. It's like adopting a child, Merle. And then saying, okay, I've accepted this child into my life, and now I'm going to try to give it the best life possible. And that's how we, myself and Hal Luftig and almost anyone who's helped raise money for this to exist in the world today, feels about it, that it is a must-see show now. It's highly entertaining. There's a lot of comedy. There's a lot of dancing. The music is fantastic. All the songs are now on the standards. But there's a new message in it, excuse me, that I think is very relevant for almost anyone at any age. My 7-year-old granddaughter likes it, and you bet a large portion of our audience are in their 80s and the 90s, even if they can still come. I've brought my mother 3 times. She's in her 90s, and my co-producer brought his aunt, who's 94. So it's a show for everyone.
Definitely. The guy that I was with, I did it like an interview because I was doing another critique of the show, and I said, well, I don't want to put the same critique I did, you know, for prior. And so one of the things I wanted to do, because I had asked him, you know, if he ever saw it before. And
yes,
as it turned out, he saw the. Now, this is a guy that's involved with theaters somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And he had never seen any stage production of Fiddler.
Uh-huh.
All he saw was the movie.
Right. I tried to have my granddaughter see that before she came, thinking that that would help her really know the show before she watched it in Yiddish.
Mm-hmm.
I have actually never seen the movie, but I understand a lot of people love it. It's very realistic, and I think that's the other thing that's so wonderful about Joel Grey's interpretation of the show now, is the way it is done with such theatricality, and it's all in the acting and all in the words, because there is not a lot of scenery and all that stuff. But in the movie, it's extremely realistic. They have the entire town and the horses and the all
of
that.
Yeah. The other thing I was asking him, because he's also not being Jewish, I said to him, well, what did you think of, now that you're seeing it, in Yiddish? And he basically said to me, it was like when you go to an opera.
He said, well, that's interesting, but of course I don't speak Yiddish. And everybody thought he might, because his father was a well-known Yiddish comedian who only spoke Yiddish when he was on stage. It's not the language Joel grew up with. And, I think a lot of people that are Jewish, or in any family, I mean, if you're raised in an Irish or an Italian family and your parents or your grandparents were immigrants, they would go back to the language of the old country when they didn't want the children to know what they were saying. So that's why I know some Yiddish words, because they were said to me. But I didn't know they were Yiddish words. There's like when Tevye is talking to his daughter and he wants to know what she really feels, and he says Zugmir, and that means, now I know it means, tell me. Well, my dad used to say, because his parents came from Russia, and I remember as a little girl, I'd have something in my mind, Daddy'd sit me down and say, Zug me, he said. Well, I knew what he was saying to me, but I didn't realize it was a different language, because it was part Yiddish, it was part English, and the words would creep in, and they have. We've looked it up, and there must be, I think there's a list of almost 44 words that the average American knows.
And they don't realize they've been talking Yiddish.
That they're Yiddish. They're Yiddish words. You know, people say, well, I had to schlep downtown, or I had to schlep the bag home from the grocery store. You know, and go, well, that's Yiddish, you know. That's if
they do say schlep. A lot of people started because they don't want, having done a lot of traveling, I find people, let's say, on the up, in across the country, and then they and now and they say schlep.
Oh, I see. What
and
you're
I have
yes.
to, and I have to listen. I go, oh, okay. They mean schlep, okay. Just like words with ch, they can't get the guttural.
Right.
So
well,
they say
yes,
things like. Yes. So we'll say chutzpah.
Chutzpah, which is, yeah, but you know, since I was born into a Jewish family, I'm capable of saying chutzpah. But I can't roll an R. Everybody else can roll an R. They always tell me they're going to teach me how to roll the R in certain words, Spanish words. That I don't care how many times you say to me, I cannot do that. So I understand people not being able to say chutzpah, you know.
That's funny, I got what you mean. Like if you're saying burro.
Yes, I can't do that.
Okay.
So what else would you like to know, Merle, before I have to leave you?
Well, can you? I understand there's something coming up that they're doing regarding Fiddler.
Oh my goodness. Well, this Thursday is World Refugee Day. And we are having a huge gathering. I don't know if it's all sold out, because what we're doing is we have raised money to bring immigrants and refugees into the theater with an entire afternoon of activities and history and information about immigration in the United States, and we are bringing these people to see Fiddler on the Roof Thursday night. And the activities are during the day on Thursday. I'm not the lead producer putting it together, so I'm unclear whether there are any public tickets available. I know that there is a lot of press around it and a lot of activity around it. I know that the mayor of New York had Joel Gray over to Gracie Mansion recently and made June 13th Joel Gray Day in New York City based on what Fiddler on the Roof is doing. And this is going to be a magnificent day, so I think everybody can watch for what comes out of that day being done and what it brings to the lives of these immigrants and these refugees. But I don't believe that the public can buy a ticket to that specific performance. They can buy a ticket to any other performance at www.fiddlernyc.com. It will take you to Telecharge. We have shows Tuesday through Sunday, which are the normal Broadway schedule. And people should come in droves. You tell them, Merle, not me. They should come in droves with their friends and their family to see this amazing rendition of Fiddler on the Roof.
And one of the comments I made is, considering the prices of tickets for a Broadway show, you're getting a bargain.
Well, yes, you really are, because that's the other reason. We said, well, if you'd gone to Broadway, you would have won the Tony Award, and we know that because the show has won Best Revival of a Musical at the Drama Desk Awards, which is Best Revival for Off-Broadway or Broadway every single time. No, it's not true, not every single time, minus one. We have won the award for the Best Revival of a Musical on or Off-Broadway, and we have run it Off-Broadway as well. We were not up for a Tony, because Tonys are Broadway only, and that allowed some other shows to step forward because Fiddler on the Roof wasn't in competition. And they've said to me, well, why didn't you take it to Broadway? You would have won the Tony. And Stephen Skybell, who is the best Tevye there has ever been, would have won the Tony for Best Actor. He's amazing. And the reason we did not take it there is for many, many reasons. We would have had to raise much more money. We would have had to pay far higher higher salaries. I think the show would have then had to compete because it would have been in exactly the same market as the shows I've mentioned. It's really where it belongs, a more intimate space.
Yes.
It's 499 seats. The smallest Broadway house is 600 plus, which is the Helen Hayes, and after that you're into 12, 14, and 3,000. We wanted people to have the intimate experience, you know, of this show. And aside from that, yes, the ticket prices are, you know, if we'd taken it to Broadway, you'd be paying double what you are to see the show. So it makes it more available to everyone as well.
Okay, and I just wanted to tell you, in terms of, like, my critiquing it, one of the difficulties is everybody does such a fabulous job in the show that it was very hard for me, and I really couldn't do it, to, you know, how sometimes when you're critiquing a show and you start picking out all the cast members and commenting about them and things like that, I went, I don't know what to say, everybody was great. I mean, it was like, it was flawless. It was perfect, you know.
That's
and I can
wonderful.
Only comment about Tevye and Golda, really, and Jackie. That was about it. I can even make a comment about, because it wasn't like this singer is better than that singer or, you know, that kind of thing. So that was one of the things why I love the show, because it was just so perfect, you know.
I so appreciate that, Merle, and I appreciate the time you've given me this morning to to talk about it. I really hope that this particular interview convinces or excites some people who haven't thought about seeing Fiddler on the Roof to come on over and see it with their family. Almost anybody that has seen it, that I've spoken to has truly thanked me for one of the most moving experiences, theater-going experiences in their life.
Yeah.
And a lot of audience goers have said to me that this Fiddler on the Roof is probably on the top 10 list of shows they've ever seen in their life. And we'd love people to come on down and have that experience.
Well, I'll certainly do whatever I can to keep the publicity going.
Thanks so much, and thanks for the interview today, and I'll look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Okay, Janet.
Thanks so much.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, yes. So, yes, really, I mean, this is a show really not to be missed. It really is. I don't know what more to say about this. So what I'm going to do, well, first I have to, before I end the show, we have to, you know, got to do a sponsor there. Where's my, of course.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yes, and you can get these absolutely wonderful brownies at brownies.com. And they also have these soft batch cookies that are really delicious, too. So, well, I'm going to end the show. I'm not going to have a brownie. I wish I had my gelato from Gelato, though. Okay, so everybody have a wonderful day, afternoon, or whatever, if you decide to listen to this. Stay safe, be kind to each other. And June is LB, getting all the letters. Month. Stonewall. Well, look up Stonewall, and you'll all understand it. Have a great day.